Welcome back to Aliyah Yomi. Today we're going to be learning Shlach Shvi'i, the seventh Aliyah of Parshas Shlach Lecha. Our Aliyah has four basic topics, and it is Korban Chatas Yachid, the Korban of a individual who sins by Avodah Zarah, a person who serves Avodah Zarah b'mezid on purpose, a wood gatherer, the Mekoshesh Eitzim, and finally the Parsha of Tzitzes. Our Aliyah is 15 psukim long. It runs from Perek Tezvot, Pasuk Chaf Zayin, to Pasuk Mem Aleph in Bamidbar. Let's take a look at each of these four different sections in summary, and then we'll take a few points to ponder. The Chatas Yachid refers to an individual who makes a mistake, and based on the fact that this is connected to the previous Aliyah, it's referring to an individual who makes a mistake by serving Avodah Zorah by mistake. He serves pagan deity. That person also brings a Korban Chatas to achieve atonement. This is true of the citizen or the convert who have the same law of atonement in this respect. We then hear about a person who sins Biyad Rama, which literally means with a strong and uplifted hand. That refers to a person who is choosing to disgrace HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's an act, and this person is cursed Hashem. Yes, Hashem, it's as if, God forbid, this person cursed HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and this person will be cut off. So this means to say they are cut off from the Jewish people in this world, and also, as understood, in the next world. That means to say they're not going to enter into Olam Haba, a very terrifying punishment that the Torah talks about over here. They may be walking around physically, but the electricity has been switched off. They will die early, and they will not have a portion in the world to come, which is a terrifying punishment. We then hear about the third section in this Aliyah, which is called the Mekoshesh Eitzim. We described that Israel in the desert, and they found somebody gathering sticks on Shabbos. They brought the seller in front of Moshe and Aaron and the community, and they put him into a jail because they did not know what punishment, what death he should get. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu then explained that they should stone him, and that's what happened. They took him out of the camp, and they stoned him to death. And finally, we have the last paragraph of the parish is, in fact, the paragraph which we call the third paragraph of the Shema, which is the commandment of Tzitzis. Hashem tells the nation of Israel that if they have four-cornered garment, they should put Tzitzis on the corners of them, and they should put Tcheles on the tassels as well. And by doing this, they should see and remember all the mitzvahs of Hashem and not go straight after their hearts and eyes. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu reminds them that he took them out of Egypt to be their God. In fact, the Sefer HaChinuch explains that the wearing of tassels in the ancient days was a symbol of slavery. You would wear these if you were a slave. So we're expressing our slavery to HaKadosh Baruch Hu when we're taken out of another slavery to be his slaves. Okay, a few basic questions over here. What's the relevance of the person who acts Biyad Rama, the second paragraph in our Aliyah, where a person acts in a haughty way against Hashem? So the Swana points out, this is a person who acts wantonly against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and such a person no longer has the possibility of doing teshuva in certain circumstances. And that's really a remez, it is a hint to what happened at the Cheta Meraglim, the sin of the Meraglim, where they acted wantonly against Hashem, and therefore in a certain way they did not have the possibility of doing teshuva. That's why even when the Ma'apilim went out and tried to fix things, but nonetheless their teshuva was not accepted, it was not successful. What sin did the Mekoshesh do? So this happens to be a matter of dispute in the Gemara and Shabbos Daf Tzadi Vav Beis. Rav Yehuda Omer Shmuel says he was a Mavir Arba Amos B'Shus HaRavim. He was carrying in the Shus HaRavim, which is why the Torah emphasizes it's in the Midbar. And there's another possibility that Toilet Shavah, he was reaping. Another possibility is that he was Ma'amir, he was gathering. These are all halachas on Shabbos. And the question really is why was he doing this, and who was this? So Rashi says that this was really the second Shabbos that they were in the Midbar. It's to tell the Gnus, the disgrace of Israel, that already the first Shabbos after they were given the Mitzvah Shabbos, they were already breaking it, and that's why it's being described in the section of disgrace. Why is it here? That means to say chronologically, it actually happened a year earlier. So why should this be placed over here? The Ibn Ezra explains, because this is an example of a person who's acting biyad rama. Here we have a person acting wantonly in an abrasive, rebellious way, so it's placed together with Meraglim as well. However, the Chaim Ekdovar, then Tziv quotes Satosis and Babasar Kufya Teslam Bey is quoting a Medrash, who says that really this was actually occurring actually chronologically right after the Chet Meraglim. Why was it? Because people felt despondent. People said, look, we've just now been rejected from going to the land of Israel. We've just heard about all these mitzvahs which are dependent on the land of Israel. So basically, we've been written off. We no longer have a chance to do mitzvahs. We are no longer in our Kodesh Baruch Hu's good books. We have no way of ever doing anything which is meaningful. And therefore, they felt that they had lost their chosenness. So what did he do? This man himself self-sacrificed by going and showing that he could break Shabbos and still be punished for it, to show you that the mitzvahs are in fact incumbent even in a diaspora reality, even when they can't enter into the land of Israel. So he's making himself an example of this. This actually fits into the notion that the Mekoshes was none other than Tzolofchad. Tzolofchad was the father of those five girls who were going to meet in Parshas Pinchas. And their request shows that they had a great and dearness, endearment to the land of Israel, which is why they wanted a chelek in it. And so this relates to the notion that this person was well-intended, even at the point of self-sacrifice over here. Now, why is the Parsha Tzitzis at the end of this Parsha? Why is it so important to the theme of Parsha Shlach? If you think that it has nothing to do with it, well, think again, because the word used to describe Lo Yisosur Acharei Levavchem V'Acharei Neichem is, in fact, the word used to describe the Meraglim. That Akash Baruch Hu told Moshe to send Meraglim lo sur es oretz. In fact, the word Meragel does not appear in this Parsha. That appears in Parsha's Dvarim. The word used to describe spies of Yehiz lo sur es oretz, which is the same word, uve lo yisosur achar elevavchem. So clearly the beginning of the Parsha and the end of the Parsha are bookends with one another. How is that working? So it seems that the point that's being described over here is that the problem begins in the heart rather than in the eyes. You make decisions and then you see it the way you want to. So what happened over here was the Meraglim went in with preconceived notions. They saw what they wanted to see, came back and reported everything they saw, which corroborated their perspective in life. Reminds me of the story of two fellows who are walking along the side of the road. And they see a little something moving around in the bush. So the one says, I bet you that the one says, did you see that bird? The other one says, no, that wasn't a bird. That was a cat. So I bet you it was a bird. I bet you it was a cat. $5. Okay. $10. Bird, cat, bird, cat, bird, cat. They put down the money and they throw a stone into the bush and out flies a gray shape. So the fellow who's, who said it was a bird, clearly, smugly folds his arms and looks at the fellow. And the cat fellow says, I can't tell you, but unless I saw it with my own eyes, I would never have believed that I could ever see a cat fly. And sometimes that's really how we are. Really, the Meraglim made their decision before they entered into the land of Israel, and everything they saw corroborated that perspective. Same thing over here. Is make sure when we make our decisions in life, choose not based on what... try to allow reality to inform you. Don't let your information inform reality around you as well. That's what's being described over here. That's the Lois Osuru as well. Finally, last point is, how is the Techeles and the Lavon, the blue and the white, relevant over here? The Netziv points out that there's different ways of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's ways of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu in ways which are in the regular material ways of life. There's also ways of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the blue, we'll call the more spiritually inclined ways of life. But all of those need to be interrupted by mitzvahs. You need to have action in life when it's serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whichever particular path one chooses. Rav Soloveitchik has a beautiful essay on the symbolism of blue and white, in which he describes that the color white denotes clarity, distinctness, rationality, all which is self-evident. Whereas Techeles, in contrast, is the likeness of the seas in the heavens, the focus of our thoughts on the grand mysteries of the human experience, which elude our precise understandings. And he was describing the ratio of blue to white. There's much less blue in the tzitzis, according to the Rambam, certainly, than the white. And that is that we live life with the clarity and, we'll call it the science and rationality of the self-evidence in life, but we need to also have the element of blue, of the part that we don't understand, which is beyond, which is not just self-evident and temporal. And he explains this in our personal life and in our Jewish history. He describes the following. If Jewish history operated solely with lavan, with white, we would not be fighting for Israel today. From the standpoint of reason and logic, logistics, our efforts are against imponderable odds, are insane. Building a homeland in a hotbed of hatred, surrounded by wealthy Arabs in enormous numbers, whose opposition to Jewish strivings is seething and unabated, lacks all rational justification. Yet we struggle because the land promised to us, 4,000 years ago, Gentiles and some even assimilated Jews view our dilemma from the vantage point of reasoned feasibility, and they cannot understand our obsession. And he describes at the time, Senator Humphrey, who was sympathetic to Israel, once said to Menachem Begin, please speak the language you understand and not in riddles, symbols, and mysticism. Speak of politics and economics. We are astounded that Gentiles do not understand us. We want them to have a Techeles approach, as we do, to see Israel as interwoven with our religious consciousness. But only the Jew has the Techeles perception. And that's part of the perspective of what was being shared with the Meraglim over here, as the end of the Chet Meraglim is to understand that not everything is rational, not everything fits into the boxes that we like to prescribe. And this concludes Parsha Shlach. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.